Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton, a writer and social media political activist, and I live in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a social policy advocate, a freelance writer from Kensington, Maryland, and I just want to say Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
I'm DJ McGuire, a cost estimator and a musician from Suffolk, Virginia.
And I'm Greg Matuzek, a former political activist, teacher, and wishing a congratulations to all puppet dictators around the world. Wait, I wasn't supposed to do that.
We told you not to do that, Greg. We put it in all capital letters.
Do not congratulate all the dictators.
We'll talk about that later. From Cincinnati, Ohio.
For crying out loud, Greg. Do not congratulate dictators was the name of your college band. How could you forget that?
Very nicely done, DJ.
Well done.
So, of course, we're going to get to President Trump and his call to Russian President Putin at some point in this discussion. But we wanted to start off with what's the hottest story at the moment, because as we are recording this, Stormy Daniels is sitting down with, well, she's not sitting down with the Anderson Cooper. They did that about a month ago, but people around the country are seeing her sit down with Anderson Cooper, and we've already seen parts of it, guys. What did she say, and is there going to be any impact, if any, on our lives?
She spanked Trump with a copy of Forbes magazine with his face on the cover.
Well, who here hasn't had that done to us by a professional porn star?
I don't think it was Forbes. Just for clarification, it wasn't Forbes. It was the Trump magazine. The now defunct Trump
God,
magazine.
God, that's somehow worse.
Yes, it is worse. It's more meta and more creepy. But that's beside the point. I'll give him that. I will give him like, okay, well, that's just playful foreplay. That wasn't the disturbing part. It was right after that happened where he said, "You remind me of my daughter." That was the line.
So wait, you're telling me that being spanked with a magazine with your own face on the cover doesn't bring up fatherly feelings in you?
No, everyone's got their kink. And I'll be quite honest, I am now starting my own Greg magazine just to get my face on it. Because that could be my own kink. And cool, I'm down with that. But the weird part was, hey, you remind me of my daughter. And that by far is not the saddest part. And the whole thing was sad. The whole interview was sad. In all seriousness, you know, we're going to joke and we're going to laugh. But this was sad.
Most women in America dream of sitting down and having girl talk with Anderson Cooper. And Stormy Daniels got to live that dream tonight. Like, sure. We all wish we could have a glass of wine and dish with Anderson Cooper this way. So kudos, Stormy, you're living it. But when he asked her point blank if she had been attracted to Donald Trump and she just said no, how are they going to keep him away from his phone after he sees that? And he's going to want to tweet. No, she thought I was the hottest thing on two legs. You just know he is.
You know, my take on this whole thing is that actually the more interesting quotes came from the Karen McDougal interview a few days ago, especially the parts where she said that Donald Trump had told her he loves her. Now, if we are to believe that, and I do, that to me is the most interesting thing to come out of all of the salacious stuff. I know we're going to talk about the legal side and the payments and what it means for the Trump administration's future. But in terms of the Trump marriage, oh my gosh, I know Melania knew that he was sleeping around, but when you find out that a guy was telling another woman repeatedly that he loves her, boy, how do you overlook that?
Well, here's what's interesting is he said Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels indicated he used a lot of the same opening material on them. That you're a smart girl, you're something special, you remind me of my daughter, you're smart and beautiful. Like, that's his opening gambit with both of them. But forgive me, I have made a study of Playmates. I watched that show about Hef's girlfriends religiously. I have read the memoirs those women have written. And Karen McDougal seemed to exemplify this. Hef really cultivated women who are not good advocates for themselves. And I felt that, you know, Karen McDougal exemplifies that. She is not a good advocate for herself. She believed Trump loved her. Did he? I don't know. She believed that, like, somehow this was going to be okay. She believed that she was going to get this deal writing columns for OK Magazine in exchange for, you know, never telling her story to anybody else. She was so credulous. And it seems to me that these interviews are the first time she's ever really making a stand in her own defense. And that is what I found heartbreaking.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, our sense of morality in marriage is frankly far too damaged for any of the particular affairs to really have much of a political impact on Trump. What I do think may have an impact, though, is the non-disclosure payment, which was made less than a month before Election Day. If Trump or the Trump campaign knew about it and it was not reported, that's a campaign finance violation.
Didn't John Edwards get away with that, though?
He had something similar. There was a trial. I think he managed to get himself acquitted on a trial. But see, unlike Donald Trump or anyone Donald Trump works with, John Edwards is actually a pretty decent lawyer. He knows his way around a courtroom.
It's true. I was going to say
he can win court
cases.
He
actually knows things.
Yeah, you know, Donald Trump is not a lawyer, and frankly, his legal team aren't full of people in which I would have a lot of confidence in a courtroom either.
Really? You're not going to hire these people to defend you if you're ever in peril, DJ? Like, Michael Cohen's not the guy you're going to go to?
Oh, hell no.
Interesting. I will. We'll have to explore that further, why you feel that they are a bunch of shysters and incompetents.
And we will explore that further. But before we get to that, we want to talk about the other big news of this past weekend, which was the March for Our Lives, which happened around the country and around the world. I was at the Los Angeles March. Was anybody else at their local marches?
Yeah, I was in the Cincinnati one, which I'm not saying that I had it a little tougher than you, but we had a snowstorm. I mean, and it was rough. You know, and my two daughters, one is 8 and one is 12. And at one point they started griping and they're like, we're not really doing this. We were in the middle of, it was snowing. It was like 27 degrees. They were expecting anywhere from 3 to 6 inches, which we didn't get. But I mean, it was coming down really hard. And they're like, we're not really doing this. And I stopped in the one line. I said, look, this is important. And we're not going up against fire hoses. We're not going up against dogs. And we're not going up against police who are there to beat us. We are going up against a little snow and a little cold. And there will come a time where you will realize this wasn't that bad. This is important to your generation. This is important to my generation. This is important to everybody. So suck it up, buttercups, because this is. and then they got it. They were like, you're right. You're right. And it's not fair to compare this movement to the Vietnam, to civil rights. They are all different, very different. And they all faced very different challenges, obviously. But a little snow didn't hold us back. In Cincinnati, we had a great, great turnout. And I'm really proud. I'm very proud of my daughters and my wife for coming out. And like I said, I'm not saying we're better than you in Los Angeles.
let me tell you something, Greg. You know, you think you got it so bad. I had to go to my march in Los Angeles wearing only 45 SPF sunscreen. So please,
okay. Well, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Save your tears for me.
Yeah, get Soros is going to give you the hardship pay there for that one, Kevin. I didn't go to the one in D.C. For a number of reasons, but I did watch it for 2 solid hours. I turned on C-SPAN and I sat on my couch with tears pouring down my cheeks, and my son and I watched it together. And, you know, for years, people in the progressive political sphere have been having conversations about intersectionality and how to make sure everybody has a voice in all of these movements and how to bring it all together. And these teenagers, they looked at all the structural barriers erected to prevent unity and to prevent intersectionality, and they blew right through them. They just blew right through them. They had this 11-year-old girl up on the stage. She's like, I'm here to talk about women of color who have been affected by gun violence and who were died because we are disproportionately impacted by all these bad things. It's like, yeah. Yeah, she just said it. She said it. This 11-year-old girl, she gets up there and said it.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous. Everyone was giving everyone else the space to be who they are and to express what they needed to express. And it wasn't just about shootings in schools. It was about systemic violence in Chicago and LA and DC and Baltimore. And these kids, if I was an old white guy watching the feed of this, I would be staring at the people who are going to unseat me. This is the future and it is coming for me. And I would feel myself losing my grip on power. These kids were amazing. They are so smart and they know their stuff and they're not scared and they're not hung up on the stuff that Generation X and the baby boomers and the generations before have been hung up on. They are just there for each other and they're going to make it better.
Okay, two things on that. One, I was amazed at how well organized, and I kept waiting to see, like, you know, four or five adults that they would all report to, but they didn't. And when I went in, I would say, so where's the bathrooms, or where's this, or where's that? They kept pointing to, like, a different teenager, and they said, this person will help you, or she'll help you, or she'll help you. This was run by teenagers, and, you know, it was really amazing. It was quick. They had it put together. It was incredibly thought out, planned well. Everything moved really well. And then two, this is the part, once again, I always have to bring everything down on a sad note, it seems. The sad thing is that all the coverage, all the Facebook, all the internet stuff, the comment section, anytime I see a comment, there's just been this massive amount of, well, these kids don't know anything, blah, blah, but they're not actually discussing their actual arguments. They just want to talk about one of the speakers' patches on their jackets, or they want to attack them personally, but not their actual arguments. Like, why do we still have these assault rifles and these military style weapons, you know, which is ridiculous. So I was really disappointed in that. But then again, only old people use Facebook, it seems. So
yeah, you got to get onto Insta for the good
I
stuff.
I do.
So old maybe people and Russian bots, plenty of that.
I know. Maybe it's just the Russian bots that are having the problem. But once again, I'm really glad I went. I'm really glad my wife and I went. We brought our young children, and I'm glad that they're seeing this. And I cannot wait till November. I think it's going to be really, really
Oh, yeah, that was another thing. Apparently, there were people registering anyone and everyone to vote at the DC March. There were just people with clipboards walking through the crowd and registered to vote. Want to get registered to vote? We can register you to vote. Let's register you to vote right now. So, you know, hopefully a lot of 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds are writing their name down and getting registered to vote and pre-registered so that they can make some magic happen in November.
Okay, but let's not kid ourselves that, you know, it's great, it's fantastic whenever young people are getting jazzed about voting, registering, and then voting. But these votes that are going to turn out in November may be isolated in some of the states and some of the districts that were already blue. They may not have a real impact on a lot of congressional races. They may impact some.
It depends. If, for example, in the D.C. Rally, there were a lot of people who came up from Virginia, because I don't know if there were rallies in Richmond or in the Hampton Roads area. Our band had a gig on Saturday, so I largely missed it. I was at a convention at a science fiction convention in Virginia Beach.
Aren't you fancy, Mr. Band, having a gig?
Yeah. So, but if they came up from Virginia. Then you have Barbara Comstock's district, Virginia 10, which is competitive.
Barbara Comstock is in a world of hurt.
You could possibly have the Richmond Suburbs district, District 7, which is Dave Bratt's district. There are a lot of moderate Republicans who have never really been happy with him. That one could be competitive. Scott Taylor's district, District 2. In Virginia Beach, if folks came up from Virginia Beach, that could be competitive. And of course, they came over from Maryland. You have the Maryland governor's race. So there are some races.
Please. Maryland governor's race.
Yeah. So there are some races in the D.C. area that could certainly have impact. And in terms of Cincinnati, Ohio is full of congressional seats that could be interesting. Maybe even some in Indiana across the way. I mean, Los Angeles, I know, is a place where you really have to go way, way out of the city limits to find a competitive congressional race, and there's no competitive statewide races in California. So I can see where you might think that, Kevin. But in the places where we are, There are some competitive races that are close to, that are in suburban areas and close to city centers.
The other thing, I can't not mention this, it's the Rick Santorum quote where he said, how about these kids, instead of looking at to someone else to solve their problem, which, by the way, I don't think that they're doing, but Mr. Santorum said, instead of looking to someone else to solve their problem, why don't they do something like maybe take CPR classes or try to do something that would help them deal with situations where there's a violent shooter. Could anything be dumber than what former Senator Santorum said about those kids?
There is. I can't think of it.
You know, there is. There is. It's the picture of Tommy Lahren.
Tommy.
The blonde Fox News commentator.
Yeah.
She posted a photo of herself today wearing workout clothes with a gun, literally jammed down the waistband directly under her navel. So that is potentially dumber than Rick Santorum, but it's very close. Very close. And, Rick lacks imagination, because you can advocate for gun violence prevention and learn CPR. You can do both. Yes. In fact, I do both. I am CPR certified, and I have been working on gun violence prevention issues since Sandy Hook. So Rick just needs to understand that these are not mutually exclusive.
Regarding Ms. Lahren, I have to say that there is a penis envy joke in there somewhere, but I can't reach for it without offending half of our listeners, so I'm just going to let it be.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to other things in the news, there's just so much to cover this week, as every week.
There is just one small thing that I want to throw in here, and I'll try to make it brief. One thing that I noticed in observing all of this is that a lot of the people who are on the, who are taking the left side of this issue or the right side of this issue, are what they're essentially having is the abortion debate in reverse, because we are now seeing the folks for gun regulation and gun control who are throwing out the "your individual rights are killing children" line, and we have a lot of the gun rights people who are essentially saying you are intruding on our lives, you're intruding on our liberties, you're intruding on the way we want to live, et cetera, et cetera. The arguments are somewhat similar, though not exactly, albeit in reverse, to the debate that we've had on abortion for the last 40 odd years. And what I would like to see, which, and of course it will never happen because I'm too pessimistic to see it, but what I would like to see is if the two sides actually take a look at those and recognize the sort of mirror images in that debate and say, okay, wait a minute. The people who disagree with us aren't really callous about killing children. They just have a different definition of what that of how best to protect them. And oh yes, the people who disagree with us don't want to just impede on the rights of every American and impose a communitarian dictatorship. They just have different ideas of what liberty means and what liberty is. And I'm hoping if we can actually get to that point, then maybe we can all sit down and go, okay, let's actually talk to each other about how we define liberty, how we define a safe society, and see what common ground we can find. Because if gun control is going to be at the same, we're talking past each other and yelling past each other rate that abortion has been practically since January of 1973, then I hate to tell you, but nothing is going to get done, because we're going to do nothing but yell past each other for the next 20 to 30 years. And that's not a good idea.
I agree.
Well
said. Now turning to the White House, General McMaster's is out. Is it McMaster's or McMaster? I think it's singular.
Just one McMaster.
Yes,
McMaster. There's one McMaster, and he is the master of none anymore because he's out. And John Bolton is in. And by gosh, did the media light its hair on fire this week over that appointment? Do you guys share the general consternation and leeriness of this man that people like Chris Matthews and others on the left were espousing this week?
No, but I'll let everyone else panic first.
He was at my wedding.
Was he really? John Bolton was at your wedding?
Yes.
Wow.
Did he bring a nice gift?
I have been deliberately not posting this on social media so that I could just drop that on you guys. He was at my wedding, and this is one of these cases where the headline is way better than the story. I had a very small wedding on a Friday afternoon, and then we all went out to dinner, and John Bolton happened to be in the same restaurant. He wasn't actually at my wedding. But,
okay.
But it's so hilarious to, like, see people's reactions when I'm like, oh, yeah, John Bolton was at my wedding. And everyone's sort of like, wait, you? Your wedding? Yeah. So, yeah.
This is my feeling about John Bolton. John Bolton, you know, actively avoided military service by, and he admits it. He admits it that he actively avoided military service by joining the National Guard. His heart wasn't in the Vietnam War. He said, I don't feel like dying in a rice field or something in Vietnam. And which, you know, fine, I get it. But he advocates war so often for young people, much like most of the Trump administration. And that kind of bothers me that we have so many people in the Trump administration, like John Bolton, like Trump, who have never served, who have never been in these situations, who are pushing for wars that they themselves would never have been involved in. And yet this is another one who's in a situation that, like, oh, I think war would be fabulous. This sounds great. How many people are going to die? 10,000? 100,000? I think they'll be fine because it plays well with the ratings. Well, that's crazy. You know, for people who themselves would never stand up and defend, you know, that they're willing to send hundreds, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of American men and women over to fight. That's my problem with John Bolton. Okay. I'm not saying you need to be in the military. But if you're one person who's pushing for wars, which he is, yes, there.
Well, yeah, the aspect of not having skin in the game. John Bolton has never been to a war. John Bolton is never going to a war. His children likely aren't going to wars. I'd be quite surprised if he's lost any friends in the wars that we've been fighting since he came to his majority. I mean, perhaps he lost friends in Vietnam. He is of an age that that could have happened. But, you know, he is largely removed from the reality of what war does. And he's certainly removed from the reality of what war is in country. He doesn't see the scars on Vietnam. He doesn't see what Afghanistan looks like now, what was lost in Iraq, the civilian deaths, the damage to property. So war is very theoretical to him. It's like a game, and it's troubling.
Kevin, go ahead. You panic, then I'll throw in.
You know what, DJ? I'm probably closer to what you're going to say than what they're going to say. That's why I have nothing to add.
Oh, okay.
I think that, listen, I'm not happy with this appointment. I've never liked John Bolton. I think that there is a bit of hyperbole in all of the reaction to him. I know hyperbole is not the right word, but, you know, I'm a little concerned about what our North Korea policy is going to be. I've certainly been concerned for the last year and a half that the Trump administration was going to dismantle the Iranian nuclear deal. And John Bolton will probably push is the wrong word, probably advocate towards those things. But I don't think that means that we're going to war with North Korea in the near future.
No, I think he's much more likely to instigate conflict with Iran than North Korea. You know, from kind of an historic perspective of what John Bolton has been interested in the past, he hates Iran. He hates the Iranian regime, and I'm more worried about Iran than I am about North Korea. My concerns for North Korea is that Kim Jong-un is going to get upset that all the attention is suddenly on Iran and, like, you know, bomb California.
Okay. Well, unlike any of the three of you, I have actually admired John Bolton for a good while.
Should have come to your wedding then.
He did not come to my wedding, but I did hear him speak about 5.5, almost 6 years ago at an Anne Arundel County Republican gathering back when I thought I might still live in Maryland.
That's a little off your beaten path there, dude.
Yeah, well, that was when I was working with on a defense contract that had me having to go to Maryland every week. So, none of that is really matters to any of the listeners. The point here is it really depends on what John Bolton we get. Do we get the John Bolton who, as Undersecretary for Arms Control, led the building of the Proliferation Security Initiative, which was probably the most active and successful effort to prevent North Korea from building and advancing their nuclear weapon program. In fact, Mr. Bolton was probably the highest-ranking American official in the Bush administration who convinced France to do something for the United States, because France was a big part of the PSI. Do we get that John Bolton, the man who can succeed in foreign policy and the man who can forcefully make the case for American interests abroad? Or do we get the one that we've seen over the last 3 to 4 years who seems more interested in running his political action committee, maybe being a candidate for president himself, and trying to say the most incendiary things that can get him on television and that can get donations to his PAC driven up? If we get that John Bolton, then we may be in for a rough ride. If we get the John Bolton who was an administration official, then I think we'll be okay. John Bolton is far smarter than, I would say, anybody else in Trump's national security field, with the possible exception of Secretary Mattis.
John Bolton being the smartest person in the Trump administration is like being the cleanest pig in the mud pit. It's not that difficult.
I have to give you that one.
Thank you.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
Moving on, you know, there were many things that were positives in the news this week, too. And you know what's a positive? When someone wins an election fair and square and you call them up and say, way to go, congrats on that hard-earned and well-deserved victory.
Which didn't happen this week.
Which is not exactly what President Trump said to President Putin, but it was something along those lines. So, Greg, you know, you're a guy who likes to say congratulations to people.
Oh, I do all the time. I do. You know,
and of course, we're talking about how Trump congratulated Putin on winning his fixed election.
I don't know how this happened. It boggles the mind how he did this or why he would do this. It's like he's daring people. It's like people dare him. Like whenever he says, don't do this. Sure. Let's give legitimacy to a puppet regime and to unfair elections. And sure, you know, let's piss all over everything that's right. Or maybe they had a deal like, I'll give the election to you and I'll sway everything by using Facebook, and then you could, you know, give my election some sort of authenticity by putting the weight of the Americas behind it. Sure, I don't know, but it was so crappy. So crappy. What do you guys think?
Here's my theory. I have long thought that Donald Trump needs glasses. And that he probably had his notes in front of him, but he can't freaking read them because he needs glasses, but he won't wear them. So he didn't know that it said do not congratulate because he, you know, he's like holding it as far as he can. And he congratulated Putin reflexively because that's what you say to people when they've just won a thing. You know, you won your handball game. Congratulations. You won your illegitimate election. Congratulations. That's what I think happened, that Trump didn't know what he was supposed to say. So he said the thing that you reflexively say in these situations. I think he was pretty freaking oblivious.
Right.
In and of itself is not good news.
Like when he took the phone call from the prime minister or president of Taiwan.
Yes. Yeah. He didn't know that we have a one China policy and you're not supposed to acknowledge the legitimacy of Taiwan. He just doesn't freaking know. He's like, I will meet with you.
He doesn't read. Right.
Oh, I disagree with your analysis. First of all, they didn't just write do not congratulate on a whim. That tells me that this was debated heavily before that call on every level, right up to the president. Maybe McMaster even argued with him about that. And when they wrote do not congratulate, they were trying one last time to stop him from doing what he probably told them he was going to do. So this idea that he just didn't read the notes and he was just being polite, I don't buy that at all. Those all caps were there for a very definite reason.
I think they need to raise the font size. I don't think he can see him. He went rogue on them.
No, I actually agree with Kevin, as you know, various people have said on Facebook and Twitter, and I shout out to them even though I don't remember any of their names. You look at all of the people that Donald Trump has started fights, he started fights with people on Twitter. He started fights with people in the media. He's talked about how terrible they are and blah, blah. There are all sorts of people that he has tried to tear down. The one exception to the rule has been Vladimir Putin. This is not a bug, it's a feature. And I don't know, you know, whether he read Do Not Congratulate or whether he didn't read Do Not Congratulate. It didn't matter. He was going to congratulate Vladimir Putin. He's not going to mention the horrific nerve gas attack in London because he likes Vladimir Putin. And in fact, he went to Twitter to defend his policy on Putin and about how good relations with Russia are important. This is his modus operandi.
DJ, you've said so many things tonight that I think were illuminating and I've certainly learned from. And that is not going to stop on this next topic, which is China tariffs.
Oh, God.
So I know that you have some mild opinions on the matter, DJ. Would you like to share
audience,
them with the class?
Kick back, pour yourself a drink, put your feet
Everybody,
up.
Put your feet up.
And, settle in.
DJ, the mic is once again yours.
Thank you. And for all of you who are putting your children to sleep, just put the speaker by their by the little one's ear. I'm apparently better than a bedtime story.
Look, no, I think this is great. I love this stuff.
Look, this is Trump decided to impose or threaten, because they're going to be imposed in a week or two, a whole bunch of tariffs on Chinese exports totaling about $60 billion. And there was a time where I would have cheered him on. 15 Woo-hoo. Years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, I would have thought this was an excellent idea. The problem is, this is not really the best way to go about it. For one thing, they can simply depreciate their currency more to knock out the effects of the tariff. And in the meantime, American consumers get hurt by this. The best way to ensure you actually hurt communist China, and I'm all for hurting the Chinese Communist Party, but the best way to do it is not to raise tariffs on what they export, but to lower tariffs on what their allies export. Japan, Taiwan, Vietnam, the Philippines, well, maybe not the Philippines, Indonesia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we could have done that had we stayed in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but Trump decided to leave that because he's a moron. So we're out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we can't do the actual thing that could damage the Chinese Communist Party the most. So instead, we come up with this suboptimal method that doesn't actually hurt the Chinese Communist Party. Instead, it hurts the American consumer. So it's just really, the intentions are wonderful, but the policies are awful, and they're only going to hurt American consumers. And that just really makes me sad.
What DJ is saying is that Chinese-produced toys are going to cost more at Christmas, so stock up now.
But there's no Toys R Us, so where will we yeah. buy them?
Amazon,
Target. Or a very lovely little local store called Child's Play, if you're ever in my neighborhood.
What about the omnibus spending bill that the president signed this week after it was passed by both the House and the Senate? He didn't seem very happy about it, did he?
Do you remember when LeBron James called a press conference to announce that he was leaving Cleveland for Miami?
Yeah,
and everyone was like, dude, LeBron, you didn't need to call a press conference about this. Just freaking go to Miami. That's how I felt about the president calling a presser to announce that he was going to sign the bill that he was always going to sign. Like, you didn't need to do this.
But he tweeted about it first, saying, I'm not signing this.
Right. No, he threatened the veto. And then he called a press conference, which was probably all enough to make Paul Ryan wet his pants, which maybe is enough. Maybe that's a reason to do all that. I'm not saying I'm sad that I thought Paul Ryan was stressed out, but come on, dude. If you're gonna threaten a veto, only threaten it if you're actually gonna do it. But no one thinks you're gonna do it on this, even if you're mad about your dumb wall.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it was but I will give him credit for this. At the very least, this gives him, I don't want to say street cred, at least he can later go back and say, yes, I signed it, but under protest because I didn't want the fine people of our military without food. You know, they forced me to sign this. And well, I mean, you know, he can say, look, I threatened to, I was hoping they'd take it back, which they didn't. This is all the Democrats' fault, or who knows, because he's insane. But, you know, he is.
You know, no, he totally is. I just love the way you said that.
But, you know, with this, in fact, this whole drama thing, which everyone will forget in a week, and when we look back,
it's already forgotten. Stormy Daniels
said
that whole thing about the spanking in the magazine. We've forgotten about the omnibus. Come on.
Right, but when we look at the deficit, and when we look at, like, oh, you know, Trump added this much, which it's amazing how, you know, 2 years ago people were like, oh my gosh, Obama added this much to the deficit, and now we don't care about that. Now we're like, deficit? What deficit? We're fine with that. We're cool. We're totes cool with that, however much we spend. But now he'll say, well, on that day, I put a tweet saying I might perhaps not add like a trillion and a half. So, you know, good for me. No, no one's going to care.
No, you know what he did? He essentially used the Friday to trample over his own message. Because here's what he could have done. He could have just signed it and said, this includes a $1.6 billion down payment on the wall I promised you people. We are starting the wall, and we're starting it with this omnibus. And he would have signed it, and Kevin would have lost his shit.
Oh, yeah!
And understandably so, because that would have been Trump saying, hey, we're moving forward on my signature achievement. Instead, he essentially steps all over his message, talks about the things he doesn't like, says the wall funding is insufficient. At one point, I think he even said it doesn't do anything for the wall. So he basically blows up his own arguments. And
best part about that, DJ, is that his fan base, we'll call them Trumpsters, Trump, who knows what we'll call them. We'll think of a name later.
Russian bots.
We call
them Russian bots.
But I prefer the term Trump and proletariat.
Okay, the Trump and proletariat would be like, oh, yeah, and they completely believe that shit. Like if he'd say, oh, I agree, DJ. Well said. Yeah. Keep going.
Nope, that was it. I was done.
Well done. Well done. Harumph for DJ. Harumph, harumph.
So here's my fantasy. You know, whenever...
Okay, let's not... You know, Kevin, if this involves a magazine, I don't want to hear it.
No, it doesn't. Or a porn star.
My fantasy is whenever the president says the dumb stuff he says, you know that... And by the way, this is not just true of Donald Trump's followers. This is true of everything anybody says, anything that goes out over the media. There are people out there, whether it's 5 or 15 or 15,000 or 15 million, there are people out there who will believe pretty much whatever they're told. Yes. And the reason I'm bringing this up is part of Trump's argument about this whole omnibus bill was that he was ready to solve DACA, but the Democrats didn't want to do it. And he's trying to convince the Latino voting bloc that somehow he is the vehicle for them to achieve their goals of being accepted into the United States. And he's trying to convince DACA recipients that he was the one that really had their best interest at heart. I would love, my fantasy is to be able to sit down at a lunch and just talk with those people. I would love to hear them speak. I would love to understand the mind of people who really think that Donald Trump has the best interest of the DACA kids or the DACA citizens. Well, they're not citizens yet. The DACA folks at heart.
Like all the DACA people at once? And are you buying? Because that's a lot.
No. It's the Trump and proletariat. He wants to sit down with the Trumpers who believe that Trump cares more about DACA recipients than Obama did. Oh, although Obama created DACA and Trump broke it. That's what Kevin is hoping to sit down with. And I interact with these people on Twitter, Kevin, and I guarantee you that you wouldn't like their choice of restaurant. So
she has a point.
Actually, I think
she has a point.
You know, I mean, like if you want to eat at Sizzler, okay.
I actually like Sizzler
too. I like any kind of buffet. I'm not a snob. I like Olive Garden.
Well, that brings me to the final point that I wanted to discuss tonight, which is something Joe Biden said to apparently in a private meeting with Democratic legislators this week in the Capitol, or on Capitol Hill, I should say. As quoted, Biden told them that if Democrats do not win the House in 2018, they're looking at another 6 years of Donald Trump. And he said, and I'm not kidding. I actually agree with Joe Biden on that.
I absolutely agree with Joe Biden on that.
Yeah, and Russia and Robert Mueller and Stormy Daniels and everything else aside, if Democrats don't turn out and vote, if we don't win the House, Trump is going to be reelected. Does anyone disagree?
He might be reelected if we do win the House. The fact is incumbency is very strong.
Yes.
And it's hard to run against an incumbent. Just ask Mitt Romney.
Yeah. And John Kerry and even Walter Mondale.
Yeah, it's...
Well, Mondale. Walter, I'm going to raise your taxes. Mondale, yeah, well...
But it's true. It's very difficult to defeat a one-term president. Ronald Reagan was able to do it to Jimmy Carter, but Jimmy Carter had the Iranian hostage crisis going against him, one of the worst recessions in the 20th century, and he was running against an incredibly charismatic challenger who had a great message, okay?
Right. And Bill Clinton was in the middle, and he was George W. Bush.
I mean, George H.W. Bush.
Yes, Bill Clinton beat George H.W. Bush, but George H.W. Bush was also, George H.W. Bush was essentially...
The third Reagan term.
Yeah, the third Reagan term. So it was not a situation like Trump has where Trump is not running. Trump does not have his predecessor's legacy hanging over him. If anything, Trump wants to cut down his predecessor's legacy like George Washington did the cherry tree back in the day. But the fact of the matter is Kevin is right. I mean, the incumbent is always the favorite in 2020. And while I'm not so certain, I mean, if Democrats get 210 House seats and come just a sliver short of winning, they still have a decent chance to win in 2020, I think. But, you know, Donald Trump will always be the favorite for re-election until the Democrats put together a campaign that knocks him into the underdog role. And that's very hard to do. George H.W. Bush was the favorite for re-election until the Democratic Convention in 1992. Jimmy Carter was the favorite for re-election, I would say, all the way up until the lone debate he had with Ronald Reagan. Going all the way back, I don't know when Herbert Hoover ever might have been the favorite to re-election. That might have been the black swan. But the fact of the matter is, the only incumbent presidents who have lost re-election since Herbert Hoover have been Jimmy Carter and George H.W. Bush. That should tell you something about how hard it is to do.
And LBJ. And LBJ. But
LBJ lost in a – LBJ lost in a – LBJ – well, actually, LBJ didn't lose the New Hampshire primary.
Right.
He was going to lose the Wisconsin primary, and he chose to back out. But
right.
I don't think any of that's happening to Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump will make it to the general election, which means he will be the favorite until Democrats force him to be the underdog. And winning the House will certainly help. So I don't know if I would completely agree with Biden, but I do think he has a point.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about the power of incumbency, you can see it in most House races. And the only reason Democrats have a shot is because there have been so many retirements. And suddenly, you know, chairmen are saying, you know what, forget it. I'm not going to do this again. I don't want to go back to the back of the line. I don't want to raise all this money. And I don't want to defend Trump on the campaign trail when I could cash out and get a better job.
And the other thing, that is true. Sorry, Rebecca. The other thing the Democrats have to recognize is why this is happening. Because there are far too many Democrats who are thinking that, well, it's because everybody hates Trump and he's energizing our base and our base is going to drive us home in 2018 and 2020. That's not what's happening. That's not what we saw here in Virginia in 2017. What is happening is a lot of Republicans and Republican-leaning independents are looking at what's happening in Washington and going, oh, hell no, we want no part of that. And Democrats who are willing to open the coalition to those voters, like the Democrats who ran in Virginia in 2017, like Connor Lamb, although he opened his big tent up to different types of Republicans, But it is those types of Democrats who are winning elections and who are winning them hands down. I mean, the fellow who ran in Atlanta, whose name I can't remember anymore, just ran
John
a typical.
Ossoff.
Yeah, he ran a typical. Yeah. I was confusing with Joel Osteen, and that's so wrong. But
Ossoff and Osteen are not the same thing.
Yeah, I know. But he ran a typical Clinton 2016 campaign. And he lost because he didn't really make any attempt to reach out to the Republicans in the center. Hang on a second, Rebecca. He didn't make an attempt to reach out to the Republicans and Republican-leaning independents who would be willing to vote for a Democrat. Ralph Northam did that here in Virginia. Connor Lamb did it in a somewhat different way in Pennsylvania. Certainly Doug Jones did that in Alabama.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that we need to do going forward in 2018, and especially in 2020.
Well, and what I've been saying, you know, as we've talked about these special elections, is that, you know, and I think DJ dialing it all the way back to John Ossoff is an interesting point, because I think he was the canary in the coal mine, that we couldn't just run on anti-Trumpism and expect to win. And right. Perhaps Ossoff, you know, there was a temporal problem. He was running, you know, it was all too close. But the fact is that we have seen Ralph Northam, we've seen now Doug Jones, we've seen Connor Lamb, and they are running as who they are and matching themselves to their districts. And Tom Perez has the wisdom to say, okay, do it. Do the thing you've got to do in the district that you know. I'm not there. I don't know these people. I don't know what they want. I want you to lead your charge. And I will be there to make sure they get to the polls. I will be there to make sure your office electricity bill is paid. I will pay for your Wi-Fi, but I'm not going to tell you how to message. And if that trend continues into 2018, where the candidate gets to run to their district, that's where we'll see success, where we become truly a big tent party in as much as we are a quilt of tents knit together. I just made that up.
And I am here to make sure that we don't run 2 hours. So
you may have already failed in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Kevin, I think you blew it. Yeah.
People don't know how long these raw tapes run before we edit them down.
And poor Kevin, everybody give Kevin a hand, because he listens to the raw tape.
Yes,
and
indeed.
He cuts out the stuff that's extraneous, yes, and he well makes done. Sure we're not boring, and he makes us all sound way smarter than we actually are, and soberer than we really are.
Yeah, he tries to make sure. Yeah, he tries to make sure we're not boring, but I'm sure he always fails with me.
Yeah, so we have to have Kevin appreciation moment tonight. You know, he is the unsung hero of the More Perfect Union.
That is very kind of you. But our unsung heroes are our audience, and we thank them for listening, and ask them to follow us on Twitter at #MPUPodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast. And please share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And don't forget to look for Open Fire Politics, the Facebook debate group where we all hang out between shows. We'd love to see you there, too. And with that, well, guys, what are you looking forward to this week?
I'm looking forward to the playback of this show with my son. Last week, I let him listen to the show, and when I dropped an F-bomb, he said, "Mom, was your editor on vacation? Why didn't they put that?"
I'm going to try to make up a story about a famous politician at my wedding and try to make it a little bit cooler than Rebecca's. I think maybe Strom Thurmond was there, and then I punched him out, and then another Nazi.